Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi there, Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. Sherry Denham and your phone calls. We think it's a great day for a new life.
Welcome to a classic program from the archives of New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. All of our calls for this classic program have already been taken, but if you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Now here's Steve.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here with my good friend and colleague, Dr. Henry Cloud. We've been working together for over 20 years, so it may work out. And
we were four when we started.
That's right. Yeah.
And four. Wow.
Henry and I are we're a little bit different in some ways. I remember the first time we had lunch, I was finished before you were really ready to start eating that hamburger because I was kind of, you know, uneasy and everything. You were settled and all. And, you know, we do this tag,
I'm a slow eater.
We do this tag team counseling thing here, and we think we're the only ones that do it because we're the only counselors that have been able to get along with each other for so long. And joining us is Dr. Sherry Denham. She's a local clinician here in Southern California and does quite a bit of work with brain imaging and other things of that nature. Sherry, we're glad you're here. But probably the headline on Sherry is, well, let me start this way. Henry, do you remember that call where the lady said after 6 years she hadn't dated and she was kind of stuck and you told her some things that I think you have shared with Sherry?
Well, I think we talked about it on the air, didn't we, Sherry?
We did.
What did you say?
Like
I was trying to the caller.
My laundry was aired out over, you know,
well, how'd that go?
Now, did we was it on the air that I issued you the same challenge I made to the woman in the book?
You did. You actually said, hey, have you read my book? And at that point, you know, finding a date worth keeping.
How to get a date worth keeping.
Yeah, how to keep a date worth keeping, which I have been reading.
And?
It's good. You were right. You had said to me, I don't know if this was on the air or just offline, but that it was probably going to stir up some things inside of me that it, you know, it's not easy being out there.
No.
I'm not going to pretend.
You're exactly right. If it were, then we wouldn't have the problem, right?
Right, right, right. And so, yeah, but I really appreciated you just speaking truth to me and giving me that loving nudge of, you know, got to get moving. Cause
you appreciate it, but have you had any dates?
I have. See, what happened?
And how did you do it? I told you to get your numbers up, right?
You did.
Which means...
Yeah. Which means, well, yeah, these people that say, you know, haven't had a date in 5 years. Well, okay, why? And a lot of times you hear the Christian answer, well, I'm just waiting on the Lord to bring him to me.
But what they're really doing is memorizing the top of their shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking down, not looking up.
Well, I just think it's a theological issue that, you know, God secured the promised land, but they had to go possess it, right? God provides for the birds of the air in Matthew 6, but they got to get it out of the nest and go fly where the bugs are.
True, and walking the Red Sea, they had to get into the water ankle deep before the Red Sea
parted. And a lot of times you heal people, but you had to go put mud in your eye.
There you go. And so what people want, it's really
I don't know
weird.
That mud would work so well on a date, though, Steve.
I hope not.
It's just really weird how people take, and there are spiritual books written to tell you this.
Yeah.
They treat this one area of life different than every other area. Every other area, you got to go find a church. You got to go find a job. You got to go find, but when it comes to finding a mate, oh, we have a special theology for that. That's nowhere in the Bible, but it sounds so spiritual.
And it's hard to argue with someone who's sounding more spiritual than you, quoting more scripture than you, even though they're off base. We really believe this is theologically sound. We've got three books. One is How to Get a Date Worth Keeping. There's another one, Boundaries in Dating, Avoiding Mr. Wrong, Finding Mr. Right. That's four. They're all there at our website.
Have you written Finding Miss Right?
I have not, because I don't know how someone would go about doing that.
Well, you did it.
She's here, right here.
Yeah, but it was not.
There she is. There she is.
Hope you're enjoying the Classic New Life Live program, and we're glad you're with us. Hang in here. We're going to go right to calls when we come back after this. By the way, if you need help, you call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. A lot of times in the Christian community, singles say, well, everything's for married people. And here we are talking with a single woman about the dating life. Henry, you had a question for her if she had joined.
Well, one of the problems, I think, and this, I say this with deep empathy for singles, because I actually studied them for a long time to write the book and did dating groups. And took
What'd you do? Have them come into your office? Next. No. Bring it up. Next single. Come in here.
Actually, focus groups from around the country through conference calls and emails, and I followed them and took them through the program. But the point is, here's the problem. You know, you're in school, you're on a dating farm every day. High school, you go to college, you're on a dating farm. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're stuck there with thousands of eligible demographically, and they have a fence around the farm. I mean, they can't even leave. But once you graduate, whatever, and you get out into the real world, mm-hmm. your traffic patterns do not get you in front of meeting eligible people. You go to work, see the same six people. You go home, you know, whatever you do that night. Saturday, you run errands. Sunday, you go to the same church. You always go, mm-hmm. and you're never meeting anybody, okay? So the first thing you got to do is you've got to get your numbers up, and you've got to put yourself in context where you meet other people. And I've got a chapter in the book called Get Over the Stigma, Join a Service. And my recommendation is people need to join probably several to get their numbers up.
And
so
did you?
I did. Yep. I am on three.
Okay.
Yeah. So three. Right. And, you know, I'm looking for a Christian godly guy, so.
Okay. Now, we're going to, we'll follow up this a little bit more right. later, but I want to go to a call right now with
But
Joe.
You've been on dates.
Woo!
Right?
Schmomp yeah. the hot seat.
You've been on dates?
I have been on dates.
Thanks for being willing to talk about this, because other weaker people would not be willing.
I told you, you should be a slam dunk. You would be the easiest case.
Joanne from Seattle, Washington, KGNW. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to New Life Live. How are you?
Not too good.
How are you? What's the matter?
Well, you got about an hour?
We do. Actually, we do have an hour, but we'll try to get it condensed down.
For about the last 8 years, I have to have, I think yesterday y'all were talking about narcotics and people, you know. And,
yeah.
What
narcotic have you been on the past 8 years?
3 years I've been on Vicodin.
Okay. And what was that prescribed for?
This chronic pain that I have.
Okay.
And fibromyalgia. Well, I've got a lot of, you know.
Yeah.
It's okay, you know. But, I don't know. If that's, and I smoke cigarettes. And I just don't know. I don't know if that's okay.
What do you mean you don't know if that's okay?
If it's okay with God.
You mean smoking cigarettes?
Yeah, and taking narcotics, and I'm nauseated constantly, and
well, let
and
me.
I'm tired of all this.
Well, hold on. Why is that the question? If it's okay with God, because let's just pretend for a moment God said, you know, it's fine. Go take your Vicodin and, you know, smoke two packs a day and all that. Would there be another question that might be important, too? Like, what's that doing to you, and do you want the effects of what it's doing to you?
Well, I know the effects.
Well, okay, well, let's start there.
What are the effects?
Of which one now?
Well, start with cigarettes. That'd be fine.
The effects of that?
Of cigarettes, yeah.
Okay, they cost too much money, and I know it's...
That's never been a problem to an addict. So let's go to another.
But that
effect.
Takes up all my money.
Right, but you're still
income.
You're still that. Doing it, and it's not bothering you. So let's get to some of the other effects.
What's ungodly?
That's not an effect.
Oh, well, I don't know what you mean.
Well, let's talk about health.
The consequences.
Oh, health. Yes, I know.
What? How's it going? Are you healthy or? Is it does it have an effect? That's
well, not yet. The smoking hasn't affected me health wise yet.
Okay. Do you exercise and stay?
I try to go for a walk every day.
A walk?
Yeah, that's all I can do.
Why is that? Because of your pain?
Of my pain.
Okay.
When I start to to walk, that's okay. when the pain happens.
And how old are you?
55.
Okay. Henry, I would love for you to take a minute to talk about the difference between unconditional love and God's favor and how... Well, I've just heard you talk about that before, and I think it's a really keen insight for people, the issue of, well, God doesn't favor everything, even though he unconditionally loves you. And you,
oh,
and,
I see what you mean.
Yeah. Does that ring a bell?
Because I think the word I use is approval.
Yeah, right.
Because
right.
I think a favor is grace. But when... You know, when God says he unconditionally loves us, it basically means that he doesn't ever not love us, and he can't ever not love us because he is love. Mm-hmm. Do you have children?
Oh, he's grown.
He's grown?
He's 37.
Okay. Do you remember when he was a little boy?
Mm-hmm.
You loved him, right?
Yes.
Okay. If you saw him and he's three and he picked up a power drill... that you had told him to not pick up, what would you feel towards him?
If he picked it up?
Picked it up and started to use it. He's got a power drill.
Well, I would, take it from him and it should have been around for him to get to it. And
right, because are you doing that because you don't want him to be a bad boy, and it's like morally unacceptable to play with power drills?
So he wouldn't get hurt.
Okay, so you unconditionally loved him.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't approve of him playing with power drills because it was going to hurt him.
Yes.
Can you look at drug use like that? Like God's not like on some moral campaign. He loves you whether you're using the drugs or not, but he doesn't approve of your using them because it's a power drill to your life.
Oh, I understand.
Well, in everything that God says no to, he's essentially saying, don't do this or you'll hurt yourself. I mean, that is his motive. It's not to spoil the party. Now, what's your question for us?
Can I say one more thing?
Yes, you may.
My family, family all live in Texas, and they don't call me anymore or communicate with me anymore, and that I do not understand.
Well, why don't you ask them why?
They won't, I'm particularly talking about one of my sisters. I have, and
right.
no response.
Well, is there any question?
I'm afraid to call her and talk to her.
You're feeling really alone.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
My son doesn't come over anymore. I just don't understand why.
Okay. Well, is there any question we could answer for you while we're on the air?
Why?
We don't know them.
Oh.
Yeah, that's something that you've got to ask them. But the way I would approach it would be, from a humble and caring place, mm-hmm. and say, you know what, I'd really like to connect with you, and I miss you, and I don't know why you're not responding, but I would want to say if there's anything that I've done or anything I do that makes it difficult, I sure would want you to tell me because I wouldn't want to do that, and I apologize if there is. If there's not, then can you just kind of tell me why, and let's see if we can work on it.
Yeah.
And put it that way.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad you called, and I hope you hear that thing about, God loves you. You're not going to change that, but there are certain things he doesn't want you to do to hurt yourself. And, I think most people that smoke cigarettes, they're addicted, and they know that it's not the best thing, and many times they try, and, I used to smoke. It's so hard. Well, it's not hard to quit. It's hard to stay quit. That's the main thing. But
yeah.
There's so many aids and programs today. It is much easier to quit today than it was 10 years ago or 20 mm-hmm. years ago. If that's your problem, you need to go get it taken care of.
And what's amazing, too, is sometimes because we don't see the external impact on our bodies, we don't realize what damage is being done or how it hurts us.
Until you're about 50 and your skin looks like leather because the smoke, the nicotine saps your skin of moisture.
Right. I have been able to, had the privilege to look at brain scans where somebody uses both Vicodin and cigarettes.
What does that look like?
It shrinks your brain.
Yeah.
Your brain's actually smaller. It's toxic to our brain, but we don't see that on the outside, right? We see it on our skin. If you think about that, that's happening inside our organs. So I think that's why the Lord does talk about our bodies are a temple. I mean, really, we want to do what things would take care of them, and those things are both toxic. And
our body's a temple. We treat it like a fraternity house.
That's true.
We put stuff in there that just simply shouldn't be.
Yeah.
And one of the problems in stopping anything like that is a lot of times it's absolutely vital.
Mm-hmm.
Vital means that which gives life and can take it away, right? Mm-hmm. So these things will kill you. But the problem with most things that are vital is they're not urgent.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like heart disease, you know, like high cholesterol, like high blood pressure. That will kill you, but you can't feel it today.
Yeah.
If you have a toothache, that's not vital, but boy, does it become urgent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so what you have to do with any kind of addiction is you've got to bring the consequences to where they're felt very urgently every day. And with drug use, sometimes you bring in the family members that are being affected by it. Somebody loses their job. There have got to be consequences. With some of these other things, you've got to figure out ways to bring the consequences to bear today.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
and one way is brain scan. If you really want to see the damage, go have an x-ray. I mean, a brain scan.
It's a wake-up call for many.
I'll give you an example. I worked with a man who could not quit smoking. He was, I think, 2 or 3 packs a day. And in his 30s, he had 2 young boys, and he tried everything. It didn't work. Here's what worked. Took his school pictures of his little boys and had to put them in the cellophane wrapper of the cigarette package.
Oh, wow.
and the coach said, you're free to do this, you know, just want you to put those pictures in there.
Yeah.
And every time
that's a wake-up call.
He had to see, you know, he could leave these 2 boys fatherless.
Yeah.
You know what I did?
What did you do?
Took medication. And it was Catapress, at the time Clonopin, which they sometimes now use with addicts.
Mm-hmm. And there's Wellbutrin as well, I think, for this.
And the person said that prescribed it, in about 10 days, you're going to have a cigarette. This will reduce that urge in 10 days. So I did that, and then I made a vow to never touch a pack of cigarettes again the rest of my life. So I didn't stop smoking. I quit touching cigarette packages, and I made a vow to...
That's a good baby step.
But he had a lot of friends say, would you stick this in my mouth? Please? I can't.
No, so that's one way. Then I said, I will never touch a cigarette. I will never pick it up. But if somebody left a pack of cigarettes in my car, I took ice tongs to get them out because I stayed true to that.
Wow.
And I would never, ever put a cigarette up to my lips. So I covered it 4 different ways, and finally that was enough. The medication, the no lip, the no touching the cigarette or the pack. Because, you know, there is an operant conditioning thing where you hear the crinkle of the cellophane, and
triggers.
All of a sudden everything goes, I think I have to have whatever is in there.
Like any other triggers.
Yeah.
People have to figure out what their triggers are.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so our whole point of this is God wouldn't want you to smoke because he wouldn't want you to hurt yourself. But if he does, he absolutely loves you. And I think he's pulling for you to quit.
So let's stop preaching and start meddling.
Okay.
Because who knows what the percentage of smokers is out there. But let's talk about people that have triggers to pull them back into a destructive relationship.
Like
they keep going back to that critical person to try to get approval.
Yeah.
Or in the single.
They're lonely and single,
and they go back to, you know, they're recycling old inventory. Like, that relationship didn't work, but they're going to go get sucked back in.
Yeah, or they feel they're not worth more than what they're getting. They're in an abusive relationship, but they don't have a sense of self-worth. Like, I deserve better than this. Their belief is that I don't.
Or they're desperate, and everything's a trigger. And if somebody looks at them, Right. Yeah. It's a anything is a trigger. And so, you know, you could be wanting to upgrade your life, but you upgrade to dirt because you're so far down. You're so into the depths of despair.
Where does he come up with this?
I don't know.
I don't know. I think he was a worm farmer in his early life.
But wouldn't that be horrible if you think you're making your life better, but you just got to the dirt level?
Yeah.
We want to see you in the clouds. That's where we're headed. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come right back.
There's your next book, From the Dirt to the Clouds.
From Dirt to the Clouds.
Yeah.
Dr. Henry Cloud, Dr. Sherry Denham, and your phone calls. And we'll be back right after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here, and hope you're enjoying the classic New Life Live program. And we'd love for you to come to one of our workshops, one of our intensives, and there you're going to meet some new people that are going through the exact same thing. You think you're all alone? Well, you're not. And I'll tell you, the next one coming up here is it's Intimacy in Marriage, October 24th, and Restore, November the 14th. These are just great, great times. December the 5th, we've got an all-star group of folks that are going to be presenting, and then you'll go into a counseling group. It's an intensive that we're hoping that could take care of a lot of hurts, provide a lot of healing. Dr. Daniel Amen, Dr. Henry Cloud, Dr. John Townsend, Sheila Walsh, and Steve Arterburn, all on December the 5th. You could sign up now. Let's talk with Claire from the D.C. area. Listen on WAVA. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Great, Claire. Thank you. Thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My situation is I'm 36, and I've never married.
Okay.
I'm outgoing, I'm active, and I'm pretty sure I'm not a bridge troll in the looks department.
Not a bridge troll. I've never heard that
What
before.
Is a bridge troll? What is that?
Yeah, that's amazing.
What is a bridge troll?
You know, I don't know, a creepy little character that kind of hangs out under the bridge.
Oh, got it.
Long hairy beard.
That is good news.
So you're beautiful, you're outgoing, you're smart, you're interactive, and you're not dating?
Yeah, and online dating hasn't really worked for me. I paid for a full year of one of the services that you all recommend, and
I'm not aware of recommending any services. No,
okay.
I'm really not.
It shall remain nameless, but you know, there's also way more available single women at my church, more so than men. So what are some other ways besides online dating?
Well, first of all, I'm not saying online dating is the answer, okay? But in a discussion about why online dating didn't work for you, I think we would probably find a Claire answer. So I'm going to ask you...
Clairvoyance.
Clairvoyance. So why didn't online work for you?
A lot of the guys whose profiles, you know, they sort of responded to me or sent me messages.
Yeah.
They kind of, you know, they checked the Christian box, but a lot of what they were saying in their profile was clearly not kind of lining up with the Christian lifestyle, specifically with regard to purity before marriage.
Well, aren't you glad they eliminated themselves so early on?
Definitely, yeah. I deleted them swiftly.
Well, the majority. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, boy, am I going to get some angry emails on this. And I'm not talking about...
I might even kick his knee.
You might even, yeah. Okay. Why wouldn't you go out with a guy that has all the boxes checked that you like, except this one, he has a different view of purity than you? Now, I'm not talking about anything sick and crazy, but what if he puts up there, you know, I think if two people are in a committed relationship, it's okay. What if he checked that box? So he's going to get, why wouldn't you go out to lunch with him?
Well, there's nothing wrong with going out to lunch, but it's
that's what a date
not
is.
Not going to go anywhere.
Whoa. Now I found a Claire problem.
Yeah.
I can introduce you to a gazillion couples that when they met, one of them was at a different understanding of spirituality and maturity than the other, and through their relationship, while the one that was further along guarded their heart, mind you, and didn't get into a problematic situation, which is also in the book, in the course of their relationship, one of them learned things they never knew before. One of them saw reasons that the other one had for a stricter view of purity than they never had seen before, and they changed. And it's just lunch. And see, my Claire problem here, Claire, is in my view, and send me the emails, you know, I know I'm going to get them. In my view, dating is not about marriage. Dating is about learning in a social experience where you learn about yourself and you learn about other people and you guard your heart. And if you're in a danger of not being able to guard your heart, like an alcoholic, you shouldn't go to a bar. If you're a romance addict, you shouldn't be dating, right? You need to get that fixed first. But why can't you be exposed to a lot of different kinds of people? And you find out in that course a bunch of other stuff, and in getting those numbers up. See, you have, from before you started, deleted the process.
Well, and that makes me curious, Henry. I want to ask you a question, Claire. When's the last time you were in a committed relationship with somebody?
Last committed relationship ended 3 years ago.
Uh-huh. And...
What happened there?
Oh, you're definitely getting to it.
Yeah. We know there's a deeper
root. I was dating a Christian man who you know, things were going pretty well. Mm-hmm. He pursued me and made his intentions clear, and we seemed to line up, you know, in matters of faith and other things, and actually presented the same, you know, views and understanding that I had.
Okay.
About
Okay, what happened?
But he was unfaithful.
Okay.
Ouch.
Yeah, so we were being pure with each other.
Yeah,
but
okay.
He wasn't being pure.
So
okay,
that now, sexual, the one that where you check the box and looking for sexual integrity, it's a big deal to you, Claire.
And not yeah. only that, you just proved your system doesn't work. He checked the box, and he wasn't pure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you've got to look at some deeper things of what kind of characters you're attracted to or drawn to, which is a much more important aspect of the dating process than can they lie on their tax return. See, if you're out there and you're learning to read character and experience and become all the kind of things that, you know, we got to go to a break. But you just proved my point. He could have checked the box and he got through the system.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life Live stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the Transformation Welcome Gift, which includes a personal-sized Life Recovery Bible, a Life Recovery Journal, and 5 Life Recovery Workbooks. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life Video Library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops.
I did go to Take Your Life Back. That's been immensely helpful to me. That's why I continue to support the ministry with the hope that not only am I helping my own situation, that I'm helping others as well.
Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today. To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. Sherry Denham. Now, we're talking controversially here to Claire, and Henry has said that maybe sometimes a person's values wouldn't eliminate them from having a lunch or going to Starbucks for coffee.
Well, that's my view. If you read the book, it's clear that I think that, first of all, dating is not about marriage. So are you telling me that you can't go to lunch and movie and have an interesting interaction with somebody that you disagree with and never would marry but learn from the experience?
Well, but let's look for a second at Claire's situation, right?
Yeah.
She was sucker punched. She didn't see that coming.
Right.
And so a lot of times what happens is when you don't see something happen, you know, you don't see it coming, and it's something that really breaks your heart.
Yeah.
And it's a sexual
right.
compromise. What happens is, I call it, our viewfinder becomes very small.
Yeah.
You know, our viewfinder shrinks up, and then we'll look at anything. I mean, if we smell it, if we see it, if they check a box, all of a sudden we're like, warning, warning, Will Rogers, run, right. You know. I was just sharing offline that I did have a date with a gentleman, and he was more open.
One date?
No, we went on like 3 dates, actually.
3 dates.
Was that okay? Am I breaking rules?
And he didn't have the same values.
He didn't have the same values.
But he was a Christian.
But he was a Christian. He was a Christian, but was open to having sex before marriage, and found out that that was something that he was practicing, you know, as he was dating different people. And, you know, the hard part was I really liked him as a person. Mm-hmm. I liked him. We had great conversation.
And he was truthful.
He was integrous. He was honest, and he brought it forward, which that helped me. I was less fearful because I knew what I was dealing with.
Yeah, right.
But we decided, you know, he actually stopped calling me because I just brought my truth. And he got to decide what he wanted to do with that. But I decided, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
There you go.
And that's
now,
okay.
I
just know there's other...
Your viewfinder was expanded by that experience.
It was. I wasn't as afraid of it. You know what's nice is I actually, going through that, I thought, I can do this. The rejection didn't feel so mortally wounding.
Yeah. It wasn't about you.
It wasn't. It was about two different people and blah, blah, blah.
Right. Now, I want to go back to Claire.
Yeah.
And Claire, I want to ask you, is anything that's being said causing a change in your thoughts or feelings or plans?
A little bit. I mean, I can see the, you know, the point of it's just lunch. It's not a marriage proposal, you know.
You read my book, Claire?
Huh?
Have you read my book?
I did a long time ago.
How to Get a Date Worth Keeping?
Yes, and that's where that's what I was kind of originally calling, because I know you, in the book you talked about how to get your numbers up and that it's not about marriage and just meeting, you know, 5 new people a week, I think it is. And I was just saying, well, you know, the online thing didn't really work, so are there other ways?
Well, and I would go back to, there are 1,000 other ways, and actually I list them all in the book, but I would go back to... The online thing not working. The online thing is just one example. The concept is you have to get in front of people to meet new people, or this is not going to work unless you marry the FedEx guy or a Jehovah's Witness who comes to your front door, right? You got to go find him.
The mailman probably comes.
Yeah, the mailman.
UPS.
There you go. Our mailman is married, though. So. Okay. So, you know what? I was starting a seminar one day, and a woman actually in the event raised her hand and was laughing, and the guy with her was laughing. And they stood up, and she said, "He's the FedEx guy." That's where she met.
It does work sometimes.
Yeah, he came to office. But the point is there, Claire, that I want you to see the Claire perspective that you took to online dating. And the Claire perspective is you have this list. And I understand there's got to be a list, and values are a big part of the list. That's where they actually begin. But I just want you to see the Claire perspective is that you've kind of decided maybe further down, you've prejudged the end of the whole process before you even begin it. And I would want to see you really go out there and meet a lot of different kinds of people, 99.99999% of which you would never be interested in. But in that process of you're out there hunting, you know, and looking, it's somebody stands out in a crowd. And my fear for people is when people stand out in a crowd of one, like, you know what I'm saying? You're not meeting enough people where the pearl stands out, and you're not in the process, and you're not letting it affect you. Follow me?
Yeah. Because I'm sure a lot of listeners, you know, have liked me. You know, there are times in your life when you spent time with the wrong people. So you kind of think, well, is it a waste of time to spend time with somebody whose values don't line up?
Well, what is time and what is wrong people? It's like when you date one not so good guy for 6 months. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, or I guess several, or I guess, I don't know, I guess I just see it as a frustrating process if you're...
It can be.
It is, Claire. It really is, and yet we stop the process. We make the process harder than it needs to be.
Yep. I got to tell you, it is difficult to date, it's hard to date. I went through it. committed to not marrying anybody until I had made 20 real-life dates. Now, that included talking to somebody.
No, it wasn't married to me. You committed to us that you would not get exclusive
right.
in even dating one
yes,
person
right.
until you had dated 20 different
right.
people. And you told somebody you met early on, you know what, I want to go out more, but I'm really looking around and trying to understand what I want, and I'm going to continue to date. And you
continued the process yeah. down to number 20.
There you
and
go.
And so, and then I married number 3. So
there you go.
And now I feel like I know a lot about people I didn't want to be with. I feel secure in my relationship, that there was nobody else out there. But I really believe if I had become exclusive with number 3, which is very difficult not to do because she's an amazing human being, if I become exclusive, I might be sitting there now going, whoa, what is this? I date 3 people and get married? I mean, there might be some doubt there. No doubt here.
That's and a lot of other changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk to Kimberly from Sherman Oaks, California. KKLA is the station. Hi, Kimberly. Welcome to New Life Live.
Hello. Hi. Yes. I am calling because I have an anger problem. My child seems to really get me very upset. And I'm just, I'm raising a child, and I hate being a parent. And his dad passed away, and I am a single mom, and I just hate it. I hate raising my kid. I've prayed to love my kid. I've prayed. I went to church. I got counseling, and it's not helping me.
Is his dad your former husband?
No, he isn't.
Okay, so how did you end up raising...
It was really easy for me when his dad was there because I wasn't around the kid very much. He'll have the kid half of the time, and the kid will be with me half of the time. But now I have to take on this responsibility of being a full-time mom, and I hate it. I hate it, and I started to take my anger out on my kid.
How?
And I scream... I yell,
and your child is how old?
Six.
Child is 6 years old, okay. And
little boy or little girl? Is it a little boy or a little girl?
It's a little girl, and I told her, I said, I hate raising you.
You said that to her?
Yes, I did, and I said it because this is how I really feel. I don't like kids. And now I'm a single mom, and I'm stuck with a kid. And I've prayed, God, please help
but,
me.
But wait a second. Hold on a second. You've prayed. But have you sat down with a counselor?
I have.
A licensed clinical counselor who deals with very, very difficult problems like this? Who did you sit down with? What was that about?
I sat down with her because I was really grieving over the death of my boyfriend, and I was really hurt. My daughter was hurt also, and my daughter doesn't know what her dad done, that he had taken his own life, that he killed himself. And I was just so hurt by that.
Yeah.
And I haven't told my daughter what have happened. She doesn't know. She just knows one day her dad is gone.
So you did some grieving, but you've never sat down with somebody and said, I need to figure out why I'm having such a difficult time being a parent, why I'm doing destructive things to my child. That's different than asking God to fix your problem. Because I think there's a lot of hope when we are willing to get in a car, sit down face to face with somebody and say, this is what I'm dealing with in my home. We'll give you more about this from Dr. Henry Cloud, Dr. Sherry Denham, right after this. You're listening to New Life Live. Glad you're with us today.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. We're talking with Kimberly, and I think a lot of people are listening, and you are relating to Kimberly because your calling just isn't parenting, and you're frustrated with your children, and you don't know what to do, and you ask God to fix it, and you don't feel any movement there. So what is the hope for Kimberly and her six-year-old in this situation?
Well, part of the hope I see, Kimberly, is being doing an honest inventory and unpacking where you've come from. I just want to ask a question about what was it like for you as a little girl growing up?
I was really close with my mom, and I loved my mom, and she took really good care of me.
Uh-huh.
But I wasn't very close with my dad.
Okay. Was he abusive?
He was abusive to my mom, but not us, none of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Who was angry?
My father.
Your father. Okay.
Yeah, I would say as a little girl growing up in a home where you experienced a lot of anger, seeing the rage from going from your dad to your mom, you've kind of held that for a long time. And I think the death of your boyfriend just opened up Pandora's box for you. It just opened up this cesspool that really hasn't been cleaned out. And so it's leaking out. And it's leaking out on your little six-year-old girl. And you,
yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, because it's getting to the point that I really can't control it. Sometimes I say things to my daughter, and I just, at night I go in the room and I cry, and I wish I could take it away, but it's too late. I already said it.
Yeah, and so what you need to do is exactly what Steve was talking about, is you need to do some deep work with a therapist. I'm not a licensed therapist. I'm not talking about somebody going in for one or two, three visits. You need to start today, because if not, you are going to do something that you're going to regret.
And you need to get some help for your little girl to get over the things, that the hurtful things that you've said. There are people that specialize in children. Situations like that could help her. Henry, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm just going to give you a little list here, and you can either write it down or you can remember it. But part of it is what Sherry has said, that a lot of times what happens is when people have some sort of stance against a child, it is because they have never identified with the child. And usually that comes from, in other words, you can't scream at a child if you're really thinking about how the child feels.
Mm-hmm.
You've lost the child in that moment. You're not identifying with the pain and the fear and the trauma the child is going through on the other ends of those words. That kind of stops people in their tracks when they kind of see that. But if you can't see that, usually it's your own childhood experience that you have never identified with, and identified with by embracing the pain of what it feels like to be a kid with all that you experienced, and you tried to kind of wall it off probably and not think about it, so it lives on and it gets projected out, you know, onto her. So that's the first thing, and I agree with her. The second thing is that you have a responsibility here. And I'm going to get to that one. But in order to carry out that responsibility, you've got to have internal resources that you don't possess. See, you look inside and you don't see the well of compassion and care and interest in your child and joy in your child and all of that. You see a bunch of other stuff that makes you mad. And when something's required of us that we don't have the resources to do, those resources have got to be put into us from the outside. So you've got to be in some sort of, and I would suggest a parenting support system where people are carrying you through this and carrying you through this and putting a bunch of good stuff into you that you can take forward that you're getting from the outside. Just to require it from yourself, you know, it's not in there. The third thing is, you said it's too late. The words are out there. It's not too late, because you've got to, when this happens, you must go to your daughter and you must look her in the eye and you've got to say, you know what? I am so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I lost my temper. I want to learn how not to do that. I'm sure that makes you afraid. Will you forgive me? And you process it because you complete a loop. And in that, she learns how to forgive. And she learns that the mommy that she fears has gone away, which is good mommy, is back. And the good mommy is bigger than the angry mommy. And then I'm going to leave you with the hard one. And I want you to hear this. And I want you to hear it with all of the compassion and care that I mean it with. This is not optional for you. I know you don't want to be a mother, but you are one. Okay? And so you're the one that has got to, with God and the help of others, submit to this responsibility for the sake of this child. And it's not an option whether or not you're going to try to get better and get better, because your daughter needs you. And sometimes we find ourselves in situations where something's required from us that we wouldn't choose given a choice, but this is where you are, and I want you to answer the call of God to become a better mother.
So it's surrendering to the reality of her life rather than really fighting within herself whether or not she has to do it or will she be able to do it. You decide, this is my job, I've got to get equipped to do it. Yeah, I really like what you said, Henry, and I hope and pray that I hope and pray that everybody will pray here, that pray that Kimberly will do these things, because it's like an impossible situation that is full of possibilities if you'll just be willing to take some action. But Henry, it's just so true. She doesn't have it in her what she needs. It wasn't there. And you know, I wonder if the way she sums up her childhood isn't, well, my mom and I were really close. And there's 7/8 of that childhood with an angry father who beat up the mother she loved that she doesn't even...
Right.
We kind of had to drag it out.
Which was Sherry's point, that something is getting relived here.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Bible, it tells us to confess the sins of our fathers, the previous generations. Jesus says, you're living out the traditions of your elders, not the oracles of God. Mm. And there's this whole line of which, if we don't turn from the failures of the previous generation and generations, we will continue them. And that's part of what repentance is about. And this is, sadly, you know, when people start this work sometimes, you see Christians hopping out there saying, why are you looking at, you know, what's in the past? Mm-hmm. And that's not what the Bible says. And we have got to bring what's in the darkness to the light, to name it, to forgive it, to move on. But that's a process.
All right. Well, we're just out of time. And what we're calling you to is to be the transitional generation in your family tree, to be the one that makes the transition from extreme abuse or hatred or anger, bitterness, to a person who is compassionate and not judging and not condemning, a person of mercy and grace and connection with other people. And that's how we believe people are healed. If you would like to find out more about how to connect, there's a great book, How People Grow. Henry and John wrote that book. And then Changes That Heal is another book. I think Josh McDowell said about that book, next to the Bible's most important book he'd ever read. Isn't that amazing? Now, that's a book that says, I think I better read that book. So if you're interested in any of those resources, you can get them at 1-800-NEW-LIFE or newlife.com. And speaking of resource, you're our only resource to stay on the air. If God is leading you to support this ministry so that we can reach out to people who don't go to counseling or reach out to people who can't afford it, then please call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE and say, I'd like to be part of the giving family of New Life Live. Maybe you join Club New Life, or it's a one-time gift, or you become a regular giver. No pressure, but if God is nudging you, please respond to that nudge from God and help us out. We're going to see you here next time on New Life Live. God bless you. See you then.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again on Monday for New Life Live.
Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.